This is the PropTech VC Podcast. We give you unique insights into how innovative technologies are disrupting real estate. We interview top entrepreneurs, investors, and knowledgeable experts to share the inside scoop in this fast-moving industry. It's hosted by leading PropTech VC, Zane Jaffer. Let's dive into today's content.
So that's an interesting thing to talk about is if we dive into the way parking spaces are operated. You talked about long-term parking, but when I'm visiting somewhere, I simply just want to park for an hour or two. So to utilize parking in the short term and long term and dynamically change the pricing for it, it's just as a short trip in a Lyft is going to cost quite different to a long trip in a Lyft, you know? And you should be making a big premium from the, you know, heavy turnover too. And also, if we expand on that too, if consumers stop seeing their parking spot as their parking spot, and you fractionalize the whole parking area where, you know what, that's not my parking spot. I have a timeshare of the parking spot almost, you know? If someone wants to stay longer and pay a premium to stay in that parking spot, there's another parking spot just nearby I can take, you know? It's not like, oh, I really wanted that Honda Civic in the Lyft to pick me up. Okay, they're being rerouted. There's a new one coming, you know? This time it's a Toyota Prius, but it's getting me from point A to point B. So I think the notion of that spot A is my spot will also change as you open up and make parking transparent and something that people can book in real time.
Exactly. A big thing we do, the way I describe it is one of the outcomes of buildings using Parkade, and part of our system, one of the things that's really cool about it is that it enables people that have long-term parking to re-rent that spot to somebody else to put it back in the pool. And what that does is it puts an opportunity cost on the parking, right? But previously a resident would, maybe they're spending $200 a month on that spot, maybe it's just been bundled with their lease, but either way, it's sitting empty when they're not using it today. And that is a travesty. If someone's gone, if I'm out of town, you know, visiting my sister for 2 weeks, why should my spot have to sit empty just because I reserved it and it's assigned to me? We're bringing an opportunity cost to the parking and making it so that there is actually a usually financial incentive for you to share that spot with somebody else. And that has a bunch of cascading effects, right? First, it just gets me to share the spot, which is great. But second, it might get me to rethink about my transportation habits holistically. Maybe if I realize, you know, if my spot was bundled with my unit, if I can get $100, $200 a month from my neighbors for my spot, maybe I just give up my car completely. And then you have a resident that has less parking needs. This is part of that equation of bringing your parking ratios down from 1.7 spots per unit to 1.2 or 1.3. That's a big part of the equation.
When you look at PropTech, this is definitely something that's going to change. And I think the next Airbnb can come out of this space, or the next Lyft, or whatever you want to call it. And that easiest area to overlook in PropTech is how people will use physical spaces. And Airbnb did a lot with homes. But I think parking spaces are next, and it's a big trend to watch out for. Evan, as we round up, do you have any questions for me that might benefit any of our listeners, either from the perspective of, you know, me as an entrepreneur, as a real estate investor, or even as a venture capitalist?
Yeah, I guess I'm curious how you think about parking when you invest, right? If you're looking at a multifamily, you know, at a multifamily investment somewhere, how when you approach it, do you think a lot about how you can better utilize the spaces? Is that something that you're putting into your pro forma of, oh, this parking is free today, but I could charge for it? I'm very curious how the, you know, kind of buying side of the industry thinks about parking when they see it in their multifamily developments. And then, you know, how that then translates into, okay, once you own it, and you want to, you know, pursue those value add opportunities, where's parking come up in the equation? And how do buildings go from a world where it's, you know, $1,400 for a one bedroom and, you know, parking is free, to a world where, you know, it's $1,200 for one bedroom and parking is $200 a month? I'm very interested in that transition if you've seen it before.
I'm going to be brutally honest with you, and many of our listeners will really appreciate this because I'm in their position too, or they're in my position. when the deal is hot, okay, that's where your focus is. And you tend to forget about the rest of your portfolio. I see this all the time at Bluefield. You know, we own a lot of multifamily. We're building some, but most of the time we're buying and we're adding value to it.
Right.
And when you're in due diligence and your team is focused on that property, you'll do everything you can to sort of analyze it, figure out where you can squeeze revenues. If you self-manage, then you can go really deep and figure out every element of it. But often when you have third-party managers, you're really calling in one of these big management companies. You know, it could be Greystar, it could be Lincoln, it could be AMC, and they come in, they walk the units with you, they inspect it, and they build the proformas for you. And they will use their standard metrics, and they'll look at parking, for example, you know? And it's never really a revenue generator at all. I mean, yeah, you can charge if it's rentals. Yep. You could charge for those, but it's not like an obvious revenue generator. It is what it is. We charge $200 a month, and we'll probably keep it $200 a month, you know, and we just bundle it into the rent. So I think on the buy side, when the deal is hot, the attention is paid to it. And real estate owners and funds, and I speak about funds here mainly, because we've got some folks who listen who are very on top of their game and actively manage their own properties and have a small portfolio. When you have a national portfolio like we do of thousands of apartments all over the US, right? As long as the portfolio is performing well, as long as it's beating the plan, as long as you're producing a return for your investors, the mentality really is, don't fix it if it ain't broken. You know, we're exceeding our plans. We're delivering a 20% IRR or 30% or 15%, whatever it is. We're paying our preferred return. Great. Let's now focus on buying more. And think about this. Why buy more? Well, you deploy capital, you can charge a fee. The more capital you deploy, the more carry you can take eventually. Sometimes you charge a construction fee or an asset management fee. So the deal team inside of the, you know, when you think about the real estate ownership, right? And it's a fund. The deal team wants to get deals done, and everyone is aligned there with just getting more and more deals done. Part two of your question was about how do we think about parking, and I think I sort of addressed that. I don't think there is enough today where other variables are not considered to improve revenues. People aren't being creative and thinking, how do we maximize the revenue we make for valet services, for you know, trash collection, for Wi-Fi, for cable access, for whatever it might be, amenities, you know, pet fees. Like these are things people, these are things that take up a very, very small line item overall in the budget. And they don't move the needle as much as, say, you know, the rent and how we improve the rent and how we add value. And I think real estate owners today don't really have a holistic view of, I wish there were just a system that could look at your real estate and automatically suggest for you, here are the 10 things you need to do that are going to work, and here's how they're going to work. Instead, a real estate owner is going to get pitched by a startup, and that pitch is going to be sitting in their inbox. And they may, you know, they may have a secret sauce where they implement one or two value add revenue improving items, but most of the time it doesn't come to the front. And there's a coordination problem here. You know, how do you implement this? And I think it ultimately, I think, comes down to the management, really. You know, the management are the ones who, you know, your third party manager or your fee manager, if you want to call it, they're the ones who have most of the sway with how things are run, unless you run your own management shop, you know? So I think parking is interesting. It's wonderful if, you know, especially in your case, if you can come up with good case studies. And I think we spoke about this, you know, a while ago, when you can come up with good case studies and show a real estate owner how opening up their parking is going to move the needle for them, people will pay attention. I've said this in many previous episodes. When you improve net operating income, you're not just creating net operating income for that month. You're improving the valuation of your business.
Right.
You are going to have a higher valuation overall, especially if there's leverage. You know, your cap rates can change. Every dollar you add could add 10, 20, 50, whatever it is to the overall valuation. So anything that improves NOI is a must. Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's interesting. I was just running a model for a multifamily development in the Midwest, and was looking at the numbers we calculated I think we'll be able to drive 125% increase in NOI on their parking, not on the overall structure. But the thing I hear constantly where I think parking is unique, you know, when you compare it to pet fees and a lot of other ancillary revenue sources, is that it drives so much management time. The thing I've heard in multiple occasions now is parking takes up 50% of my property management, my team's time, and it makes up 5% of our revenue. And oh yeah, and it's a loss leader, right? Today it is thought of as a loss leader. It's something you need. It's not, no one's building it. Maybe in most cases, I would think no one's building it as a profit center on their multifamily development. They are building it because they need it to rent their units. They need it to make their units marketable. But in doing so, it creates a huge source of resident frustration and a huge source of, you know, time sucking on your management team's time. And I think that's where our value prop is going to be nicely aligned, where instead of, you know, the world of it takes up half your team's time and drives up, you know, drives 5% of their revenue, I want parking to take up 5% of your team's time and drive, well, probably not 50% of your revenue, but maybe 15, maybe 25 as we look, you know, a year or two out. And that's our goal.
Big scale, you're building a big company ultimately.
Well, that's what we're doing.
You know, I know some of our viewers are probably dying for me to ask this question, especially if they've listened to the last few clips here. Self-driving cars. I mean, you know, one day when we have robotic taxis, isn't that going to just change the complete need for parking overall? Do you think, as someone who worked at Lyft, as an insider, someone who's worked in the industry, is this real or is this fantasy? And what time frame is it if it's real or you know, is it just fantasy ultimately?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question and a fun question. And I think, you know, few technologies are more exciting than the idea of self-driving cars. Although I am really excited to find out what happens when cars actually have to obey the law. That'll be an interesting day where speed limits are observed and, you know, stop signs are observed and all of those things. People might rethink their desire to get in a self-driving car. Although I think I'm super excited about vehicles that actually, you know, follow the laws. It's going to be a massive safety improvement eventually. But the thing about self-driving cars is...
No, but hold on a second. Why?
Yeah.
Why do you have to follow the law if the laws were designed in mind with there's humans who create errors when they drive and those errors cost lives? If you've got robots and robots are you know, in sync with each other, why does the speed limit have to be 60? Hell, it could be 200, right?
It could be when it's safe. Yeah, for sure. I mean, we could end up with I think it'll be likely that we end up with higher speed limits on the highway and lower speed limits in cities, right? I could easily imagine a world where, you know, come self-driving, especially because of all the efficiency gains we should have, hopefully speed limits are, you know, 15 or 20 miles an hour in major urban centers where there's pedestrians everywhere, but maybe they're 100 miles an hour, you know, on the highway, especially if there's electric vehicles.
You've obviously answered part of my question already, which is this fantasy? It's not fantasy, it seems. You've already gone into, like a product guy, obviously, you've gone into some detail now. About,
I've gotten into some product details.
The stakeholder impact.
Yeah, I was going to say that, you know, the thing about self-driving cars is I think people expect a light switch, right? People expect... January 1st, 2023, I wake up and we flip the light switch and not everybody, but all of a sudden there is massive, you know, autonomous vehicle availability. And I just don't think that's how it's going to work. I think it's going to be much more of a slow burn. I think we're already starting to see this, right? I know there's, I forget the name of the company, Voyage or something like that, but there's a firm that's already doing autonomous vehicle rides at 5 miles an hour in, you know, retirement communities. And it's a great service there. It's a much easier one to provide because everything is slow moving and, you know, situations are not changing that fast. And I think we're going to find that, you know, in 2022, 0.1% of rides are autonomous. In 2023, you know, 0.25% are autonomous, you know, something like that, where slowly over time, more and more of these trips are able to be handled by these self-driving vehicles.
I'm guessing semi-autonomous is sort of the prerequisite and probably a bigger wave of adoption, right? And then from semi-autonomous, right, You'll get to fully autonomous or some type of, you know, different levels of autonomous.
Exactly. Yeah. And the, you know, we have, they have kind of syntax for this already, right? Level 1, level 2, level 5, that kind of thing. But I think it'll be a slow burn.
So if anyone's worried about owning parking lots, now you're crazy. Now you need to get rid of parking lots completely. Not because you're worried about, if you're not worried about parking spots being democratized and opened up and being bidded on transparently, then self-driving cars are going to kill it, right? But isn't that scary for you too?
Well, the thing to keep in mind is a self-driving car still needs parking. Right? Do we want to live in a world where between, you know, as soon as Zane has been dropped off, you know, in downtown San Francisco in 2025, your autonomous vehicle circles endlessly for 6 hours waiting for its next hail? I don't think so. I think a lot of governments are going to mandate that.
Damn.
They can't do that.
This is almost like
parking doesn't go away. It just changes.
Sort of to build on that, if you think about logistics and how a big retailer might build out their distribution channel and you need to have hubs everywhere so you can easily, you know, access demand or deliver supply to the demand. You might have a very intelligent AI algorithm that decides where to park based on where demand might be coming from.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and I hope that we can park in some of those empty apartment buildings that maybe as the autonomous technology rolls out, fewer people own parking or own vehicles, and all of a sudden their parking spaces that, you know, are going unused are used by autonomous vehicles.
I can very much imagine a world where Lyft or Uber are renting parking spots.
Right, you know? Exactly.
Now, to go one level whack here, okay, because I was hoping to hear you say fantasy, because some of our real estate listeners are very skeptical, they're very traditional, right?
Yeah.
So far, we haven't had you say anything fantasy yet. What about like air taxis? Look, some large companies out there are working on this. Is that fantasy now, or do you think that's also a possibility in the future?
I don't think it's total fantasy. And to be clear, I mean, I left Lyft long before, you know, we started working on self-driving, and I was at Ford, and Ford is, you know, working on self-driving I was at Chariot through Ford. But, you know, I think anything's possible, and, you know, the technologists around the world are going to try to make it happen. I think, you know, we live in a country that sees, you know, I think 40,000 people a year killed in traffic violence, millions injured each year. I think there is a desperate need for better technology and transportation. I think, you know, self-driving vehicles offer a lot of that potential. So too, I think, you know, does air, I'm guessing that the place will start with air transport, really kind of self non-piloted air transport is likely in package delivery, right? If we could just, you know, offload your Amazon package that can be dropped, you know, 4 feet anyway onto a soft landing spot, that's probably a much easier place to start than, you know, going straight towards transporting humans, because we need to make sure that when you're transporting a human, it's really, really safe. But I don't think it's a complete fantasy, and I certainly, you know, hope we live in a world where it's possible.
If that's not a fantasy, I'll leave our viewers or listeners with a final sort of idea here, right? And I thought about this idea myself, but I came to the conclusion there's much more money to be made doing things that are a little bit more short-term, e.g. 5-10 years from now, right?
Yeah.
If you're thinking about repurposing parking lots, think about repurposing your roof one day when, you know, you need to turn it into a helipad, or you need to turn it into a, you know, a place where parcels can be delivered directly from the Amazon drone warehouse. You know, that just blows my mind that one day there may come a time where it's not about solar on roofs, it's about creating a drone-friendly landing pad, you know, and how that real estate that you own on the roof can suddenly be auctioned off, you know, and have landing rights. Just crazy concept there, you know, and I don't think many people have thought about one day this roof could make me money, you know.
Well, and to play that, you know, because I am a product guy and I love thinking about the details, to play that out, you know, it seems unlikely that you're going to want to have your property management team taking the elevator up to the top floor constantly to get packages. So you're probably going to need to design not a flat landing pad, but some kind of chute that, you know, it can be, things can be soft dropped into that hopefully go down to a package room or something like that. So, you know, those are the things that you should be thinking decades ahead. You know, let's think decades ahead, and let's, you know, it might not be too early to start thinking about, you know, how to at least ensure that down the road your building has room for that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, Evan, it was great fun having you and brainstorming here. How can people reach you?
Yeah, they can reach out to me at evan@parkade.com. That's EVAN, and Parkade is spelled PARKADE.com. And would love to hear from your listeners. Happy to chat with anybody that's trying to bring down their parking ratios or has existing parking that they just think, look, it could be better managed. It could be available to tenants in a much easier way. And especially anyone that feels underparked today, I promise you, if you use Parkade, you're not going to feel underparked anymore. That's really, you know, something we want
to
solve.
Just to sort of repeat the email address in a British accent here, it's evan@parkade. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Well, that sounded much classier coming from you.
Great.